is preserving your interest in the property. And if anybody comes along and buys that property later or makes a loan on that property, they have to stand after you in the same way that they would have to stand after a first trustee on the property. So, you know, put a lien on that, that will show on the record. We really screwed up a transaction one time. This guy was a con artist, and he was getting this property, and he was going to town with it. And then all of a sudden, we filed this preservation of interest, and it was backed by a legitimate lawsuit, okay? And all of a sudden, it locked up all his credit. He couldn't get any loans on the property. It really screwed up. We stopped the project right in the middle of building with that.
Okay, in your case, you had a judgment. If it was preliminary after filing of a case, what would the wording I'd be in interest?
No, you already have a judgment? Is that what you said?
No, you had a judgment.
No, we didn't. Oh. Well, here, yes, in this case we did.
So
but
in
there was
my
another
case, what would the wording for interest be probably?
Well, just look at the plain English meaning. Do you have an interest in his property?
Yeah.
Why?
Potential judgment.
That's right.
Say again.
Potential judgment.
That's right. You got a potential judgment. There's an issue at stake here. So because of that, you have an interest in any asset he has. So find out what property he owns and put a preservation of interest on it.
Now, with my experience in the loan industry, if you're being sued for anything, it's hard to get a loan.
That's right. And you make that public that way. You betcha. Although I suspect they're a little easier on judges. You know? But nevertheless, you put in a preservation of interest, nobody's going to make a loan on the property itself. You know, there's equity or something like that. They don't want to lose it. What if he loses the lawsuit? They'll lose their loan. Or at least they won't have that property as security anymore. Okay? But this is the actual form that we used. See? And it was put on four judges here. And this form is specified in the code itself. So it's easy. You just type it up. Nothing formal. Okay? It doesn't even have to be exactly the same as long as you have the information required by the code. So civil code 880.020. Yeah, you had another question back there, I thought. Nope. Not right now. Okay. So that's an important tactic, and so the attorneys have their list pendants, which functions the same way. It lets the world know that there's a lawsuit going on and this property will be affected. And we have for the people, we have the preservation of interest. It's a great tool.
Mm-hmm. In our last discussion, you were saying there's only one sheriff, one judge, one
court clerk, one
court clerk,
county recorder.
Are you going somewhere with that?
Well, yeah, I was. What I was getting at with this one of each, you have one court. So hey, if they don't want to deal in their criminal court, if they don't want to deal with your counterclaim, you just go to the civil court. It's the same court, same county. So you file it there, you name them, and in the body of the suit, you say what the real situation is, because that controls the head of the headings. Okay.
So
now I would put it exactly as the situation is. If the clerk objects, the deputy clerk, who probably doesn't know anyway, you might ask for the supervisor, you know, just in case you get somebody knowledgeable. But if you fail on that, just say, okay, what's your requirement? See, you don't ask them for advice, because they cannot give you advice. They'll tell you that instantly if you ask them for advice. What you do is, instead of asking them for advice, you say, what do you require? They can tell you what they require. They just can't give you advice. Okay? So you ask them, all right, what do you require? What do you see that does not meet your requirements here? Don't ask them, what should I do? You say, what is it that's failing to meet your requirements? So when the guy pointed out to me, well, we don't have counterclaims. We can only have complaints. I said, okay. Scratch it out. Wrote complaint. What's the next thing?
So it's what you're saying, subject to their requirements. Filing in any court is like filing in all courts?
Within the county?
Within the county, yes.
Right, because the county only has one court. They only have one presiding judge. Okay? So, however they divide up their court system, it's still one court. It's just which person is handling it. Okay? So, that's what you do. That's what we did. So we went over there, we sued them, we got it going, we issued our court orders and so on. You might look at that that case, you know, look at some of the paperwork and see how it was done. I'll try to get it on the, well, you saw how it was there, and let's go back to that. All right, let's see what we got here. Common law action, right here in this common law action, we have the declaration right here. Well, actually, we did a counterclaim, as I recall. So, see, you put the original criminal case, and then you follow that with your case, who your defendants are. And so and name them that way. If the clerk gives you too much trouble, you can, by hand, you can change counterclaim to complaint. Okay? The truth is, they're a civil court, and they haven't made provision for a common law case. See, common law is different from statutory law, which is different, or, you know, from civil law, I meant to say, which in turn is different from criminal law. You have criminal, civil, and common. Well, they're not equipped to handle common, and that's not an accident. They do not want to deal with it, you know. So, they don't have the procedure set up for it, so you kind of have to wing it somehow. I suspect they have a procedure, we just don't know what they call it, how you get into it. It'll take a little more research. Go down there and talk to a clerk, take the clerk to lunch or something, and find out what's going on. But you have that, it is common law, but you're dealing with a clerk who only knows civil and the civil requirements. You're trying to get it into the system. So what you do is you say, okay, conform to his heading requirements. He's going to look at it and says, we don't handle counterclaims. All right? What is it that you require for this to be filed? You say, well, it's got to be a complaint. Oh, okay. Draw a line through counterclaim, hand print complaint above it. Make him happy.
Well, you never did that, though. You just wrote
complaint.
You just wrote complaint above counterclaim.
Yeah,
and I crossed out some stuff on the other side. I don't remember what all that
was.
Okay,
that's a minor point. The point is that he's going to take the description that he wants.
I thought I showed you
none
that.
Of that. You did. But none of that controls. What controls is the body. Okay? The actual body. You've got to go down here below the horizontal line. All right? Right there. First cause of action, trespass. Identify the parties. Identify the jurisdiction, or not the jurisdiction, but the forum. In this case, a court of record. What is a court of record? Well, you know the requirements, okay? So you've got to identify that. Once you do, name the defendants, have a summary there, an introduction, you know, and so on.
You say the heading doesn't matter, it's the body that matters, but you also
yes.
said, do not call a counterclaim a cross-complaint.
Well,
is my memory correct?
Yeah, that's not in my vocabulary, cross-complaint. Because
the clerk says we only understand cross-complaint, not counterclaim.
Well, look, the whole purpose of these things is to give people an idea of what's going on before they get into the meat of it. It's a guide, that's all. You know, if you got a screwed-up clerk who is ignorant and doesn't know these things, well, sometimes you have to deal with ignorance. You know, there's this philosopher in Germany called Goethe, and he said that there's nothing so fearful as ignorance in action. Okay? And I mean, you run up against ignorance, they can screw up all kinds of stuff because of that ignorance. What are you going to do? Fight them?
You're right.
You know, I'm not into fighting, I'm into winning. So, you know, this guy, he put these conditions on. As long as it didn't affect the fundamental situation, I didn't care. I'll do whatever he wants. I'm not there to educate him or to get perfection in the law or anything. I just want to win. So we filed it in. change that, whatever, or put it right up. Didn't matter. The body was intact. He never looked at that. And like I said, there was an attorney later that complained about that. I had to explain to the attorney in the responding papers that it's the body controls, not the heading. And he even objected to that. Go ahead, you're trying to say something.
I interrupted. I didn't want to do it twice. You said cross-complaint is not part of your vocabulary right before I interrupted. You're going to explain that, though?
Well, just that we do counterclaims. Okay? I don't want any of this, let's average out the claims. All right? No, I'm stopping them. This is a jurisdictional challenge. You haven't proved your jurisdiction. Now's your chance. Answer this lawsuit. You didn't answer it before. Now we're suing you for it. You better have a good explanation. Otherwise, we're going to win. Okay? They came back with a demur. They said, yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, we had no jurisdiction. But guess what? We're immune. Then I'd explain to them in the next papers why they were not immune. Okay? So we went there. It finally resulted in we filed a judgment against them. The plaintiff wrote her own judgment and filed it. Okay? So now they're on the hook for that. And they never responded to that. In the judgment, we gave them time to tell us why we're wrong. You had X number of days. You tell us why we're wrong in this judgment. They never answered to that. What's the famous rule? If you fail to object, it means you agree. Okay? We invited an invitation. And by the way, anytime you issue an order, anytime, always couple it with an order to show cause. In other words, you make your order, whatever it is, and then you add one more order. And this one more order says you have X number of days to show cause why this judgment shall not be implemented or shall not be executed or whatever it is. You know, you have a chance to let us know why we're wrong. Now you've given them a full and fair opportunity to tell you why you're wrong. And if they don't even bother to answer, it doesn't matter if you're wrong. You become right. The beauty of it. They never answer these things. And there's a good reason why they don't. They can't. They really are wrong, not us. At least that's how I interpret it. You know, they dance around these things. I'll give you an example. There was a guy that sued somebody. I don't know who he sued, but he sued somebody. And they defaulted. So then he had the clerk enter the default. So then the judge woke up, or somebody woke up, and so this judge issued an order removing the default and setting a pretrial conference. We're going to go to trial on this. So he said, no. Okay? So what he did was he issued an order, first of all, reinstating the default, removing the judge's order, and also directly ordered the judge to not file any more orders in this case without permission of the court. So you never block anybody out. If you are going to block somebody out, you always give them a doorway to come through. In this case, we said you have to get permission of the court before you file another item, see? So all he had to do was put up, if he had an order, he could submit it and we'd look at it and either approve or disapprove. So we also ordered this pretrial hearing off calendar. So everything was fine. About a month later, I get a desperate call from the guy. He wanted to know, what do I do? I said, about what? You know, we settled this. He says, we're having a pretrial hearing in 2 days and I don't know what to do. I said, what pretrial? We took that off calendar. No, he says, this is another one. I said, well, we ordered the judge not to file any more orders, you know. Well, it turned out, here's what really happened. After we issued this order, the judge created another order. Now, we didn't tell him he couldn't create an order. We only told him that he couldn't file another order. Mm-hmm. Okay? So he created another order. He then put a cover letter on it and mailed the whole thing to the plaintiff, the sovereign of the court. And in the cover letter, he instructed the sovereign, the plaintiff, to file this order in the court. And he did it. He filed it in there. It was an order setting up a new pretrial hearing.
He didn't read it, huh?
No, he read it. He just didn't understand. He wasn't that bright. Nice guy, heart in his right place. He had a just cause, but, you know, he just didn't have it. He was really trying his best. But the judge, I mean, it shows we have some validity in what we're doing, because the judge figured out a scheme to get around this. So here it comes this day. Well, fortunately, it was 2 days away. So overnight, we prepared a writ of error. A writ of error is when you have an error that relates to procedure. Any procedural error can be corrected with a writ of error. In this case, the procedure was an order was filed without proper authority. The clerk should never have accepted it. The clerk should have rejected it on the spot. So, the clerk didn't. The clerk filed it. So we issued a court order vacating that order that was filed and also ordering the hearing off calendar again. Okay? And that did take care of the problem. But it shows you that this system does operate. It doesn't operate perfectly because we do have rebellious judges sometimes who refuse to play ball. And I find that in about 5% of the cases, the rebellion runs deep. Okay? They don't care about their future careers or something. I don't know. But they are in rebellion. They're getting tougher. I think what's happening is that I think this is starting to crystallize on a nationwide basis. You see, these judges do go to seminars. I think they have, what, one of them is in Las Vegas, and then there's another one that's somewhere back east. There's a, I don't know whether it's Tennessee or what, but there's someplace back there they have a...
Reno, isn't it?
No, Reno is, well, yeah, you're right, not Las Vegas. I think it's Reno, right. It's a judge's school, okay? They call them seminars. And I think that they deliver messages at that time. The word gets out, watch out for certain types of cases. And the IRS has seminars for judges where they're no particular case. That's why it's legal, you know. But they educate judges as to what the situation is. So then when a judge runs into it, you find you have a hard time. And because the judges never hear the other side of the picture. Okay, so that's one of the problems. Yeah.
I saw a video back several years ago of the judges' convention in Reno.
Yeah.
And this was the keynote speaker.
About Elvig.
He started his speech off, "We have a problem."
Right.
Roger Elvig will be out in about 1 year.
Yeah, yeah. We
Did
have,
you see that?
I have the tape and I've never seen it. One of those on my to-do list. Yeah, I get all kinds of information like that, you know. And yeah, but that's right. In their convention, Roger Elvig was on their minds, and they spread the word. We got a problem. Want to let you guys know.
Now, what's the situation with Roger Elvig? Do you know?
Well, last I heard, he's still in jail. I don't know. Talk to Barbara. I think she knows.
Well, what was his charge?
Well, Roger Elvig. Apparently his name was used, and so therefore, because his name was used, he didn't participate in anything. It's just his name was used. And so Ohio put out an interstate warrant for his arrest. They picked him up in, I don't know, Michigan or South Dakota or Minnesota, somewhere up there. And they extradited him, brought him back down to Ohio, and convicted him of, I think, conspiracy or something like that. And he never even talked to the people. You didn't have anything to do with it. So, yeah, you know, they were desperate. They were reaching for straws. They don't like him.
Government run amok.
Yeah, well, the government has declared its independence from the people. That's true. So, it's a difficult. Yes.
One more. Earlier, you mentioned that. Okay, paraphrasing. If a court never had jurisdiction, then it never could have made a judgment. So
right,
even if
it can't
convicted of something, if the court didn't have jurisdiction, then the conviction is invalid.
Well, that's basically true, and as a matter of fact, during the pre-sentencing phase, there's a moment there called allocution, and that's where you have one last shot at saying it. And so in an allocution, one of the issues you could raise is the judgment is coram non judis. And coram, C-O-R-A-M, and then non, N-O-N, judis, J-U-D-I-C-E. Coram non judis. You raise that issue. And what that basically says is, hey, you guys had the... You conducted the trial, you did everything you did, you came to the judgment, everything's final, excepting for one thing. It's not valid. You never had jurisdiction, so you went through all this, but the judgment itself has no validity. That's the quorum non judis. You raise that issue. And you have to raise jurisdictional issues.
What if the verdict was handed down some time ago?
Well, then you do, if it's some time ago, you're past that point. Is the judgment still active? I mean, it's still being enforced? Or is it fines paid and time served? It's all done? Well, then what you do is you would just simply sue them. There'd be an original claim. They exceeded their jurisdiction. They ignored all objections or whatever it is. You know, make sure you're right. But that's basically it.
And you sue the court?
I would sue everybody that's involved there.
So sue the...
Yeah, actually, see, that's the superior court, inferior court thing. They're an inferior court, so their judgments are subject to collateral attack. That means you can sue them in a court of record. Court of record has full jurisdiction, so unlimited jurisdiction. It can consider everything, whereas they were restricted in what they could consider. So you basically can open it up and have a retrial or something, reconsidering or reevaluation. Only it's your court now. Okay. Yes, sir.
How about for somebody who's in jail? Can that be reversed or corrected? Or?
Well, you're saying after judgment?
Yes.
Habeas corpus would be the answer. And the issue is jurisdiction.
Okay.
Yeah. 2 minutes left, gang. Yeah.
Cassius Clay was convicted of a crime.
Yeah.
And he changed his religion and his name thereby,
mm-hmm.
and went in for his sentencing, denied he was Cassius Clay,
mm-hmm.
and he was never sentenced.
Okay.
Now, it seems to me you go into court and you're sentenced, and one of the things the judges will ask you is there any reason why judgment should not be passed at this time?
That's allocution, right.
Now, I believe that if you say, I renew all motions and I am not the straw man and give your Christian name,
mm-hmm.
I don't believe that they could convict you. What do you think?
I don't, because I don't understand that straw man business. You know, that's back to UCC and all that. So I'm out of that industry. I've told you what my limitations are. You keep trying to drag me into these areas I don't know. Okay? Well, I think we're at the end. Appreciate you coming. We're running out of time on the disc.
45 seconds.
So, yeah, 45 seconds. So any last... Okay, thank you. Okay. The website is 1215.org. If there's future sessions, they'll be announced there. So... Future
and
seminars.
I should kind of close here for Bill and tell you that we need about 100 people.
Grab that mic. Grab that hand mic. Right there.
Oh, well. Anyway, we need about 100 people to start showing up at these meetings, because if we can ever resurrect the common law, we've got America back. And we need the common law taught in our schools.
All right. That's it.
Okay.
That's it.